Welcome to the Wealth Setting Podcast. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm the founder and money manager at investablewealth.com. Today, you're listening to episode 19. The date is August 27th, 2014. We're continuing answering listener questions in this episode, and we're going to get down in the weeds, and we're going to talk specifically about how to spot a trend, what's going on with some trends around us, and then really drilling down and not only looking at the trend from 30,000 feet, but taking that down to a granular level and saying, how would you select a specific stock to take advantage of a current trend? Now, the trends I'm going to use are feedback that I've received from listeners. And in fact, the stock that we're going to drill down and analyze today was provided by someone from the audience. Now, before we get started, let me again thank you. You're a wonderful audience. I enjoy getting your emails. I especially appreciate those of you that have subscribed through the iTunes and have gone out there and rated us. We've picked up an additional couple ratings just since the last episode. I'm humbled and I greatly appreciate the activity that I'm seeing from our audience and the community that we're already starting to build. Mostly I talk about iTunes because in the podcasting world, that's a pretty dominant place. Now, I know many of you do listen through other applications on Android devices. I appreciate that. If you're having problems listening or there's other rating services or things that I should know about Android, please let me know. For example, someone has recently told me that the Wealth Setting Podcast is not available on Stitcher. I have been in contact with Stitcher and hope to resolve that issue, and hopefully episodes will be soon available there as well. So again, thank you for all your support. I love doing this podcast because it always sharpens my investing skills, and it really requires me to focus my thoughts and come up with clearer explanations for the type of investing decisions that I make. So doing this podcast is a great benefit to me personally, but it's always nice to hear from the audience and hear that how it's affecting you and how much you appreciate it. That really makes me just want to churn out more episodes. But hey, now let's dive right into today's topic. I told you we're going to get down in the weeds. We're going to specifically identify some long-term trends. We're going to drill down, pick out a specific stock, and then we're going to look at its fundamentals, its technicals. We're going to talk some numbers. As I said, I know some of you are going to eat this up. Some of you are not going to like it so much. For those of you that maybe not so much, hang in there. Listen all the way through. I think you'll find it interesting and fascinating. It'll make you a better investor. If nothing else, it'll help you understand what people in the industry go through, and then you'll better be able to relate and help yourself identify people in the industry that know what they're talking about and those that don't. So strap on your seatbelt, tighten yourself in. Here we go. Let's talk about how to identify trends. What do I look for? What are some specific things that some of you listeners have mentioned to me? And then how do you drill down and actually not only see the trend but pick a particular stock out? Well, I can't cover all that in depth today in this one episode. I will refer you back to some of the previous episodes that we've done to give you more of a foundation on that. And that's where we covered the wealth building principles, episode 5, 6, and 7. If you haven't listened to those, or if you have, you might want to go back and re-listen. Those are the episodes where we talk about embracing technology and innovation. That's episode number 5. And then the sixth wealth building principle is profit from trends. So definitely listen to episode 6 if you haven't. And then episode 7 is Profit from Nature. Very similar to trends, but again, go back and listen to them. You'll see the difference. But for today's episode, let me give you some brief overviews of that. When we look for trends, we're looking for both short-term and long-term trends. Now, long-term trends would be, for an example, that would be a long-term secular trend. Global markets, it's something that's going to affect the stock market for a long period of time. It may not necessarily make the stock go up or down tomorrow, but it's a long secular trend. Over 10 or 15 or 20 years, you know that's going to have some kind of impact on the stock market. For the last 30 years, since about the time that Jimmy Carter was president, interest rates have come down. That was a long-term secular trend. That not only had an impact on bond prices, but also had a corollary impact on a positive effect on the stock market. That was a long-term trend. Another long-term trend is demographic issues. People in developed worlds, people as they become more educated have less children. Currently, most of the world, and the U.S. included, have a low fertility rate. They have a fertility rate that's below the replacement rate. That's a long-term trend that has long-term implications for not only the society, but also for the stock market. The baby boomers are another example of a long-term trend. You can follow them throughout their life, when they were first born, how that affected the housing market of people coming home from World War II, getting married, buying their first house, having their children, and that baby boom, which lasted for about 20 years. You can just follow that through the economy, how that affected the sale of things like toys and diapers and you know, then they moved into high school and how that affected local municipalities and how they had to build more elementary schools, more junior highs, more high schools. Then that big mass of children were teenagers and they went into college and university. Then they went into the job force. They embraced technology. Now they're old and they're retiring. They're leaving the workforce. They're probably going to be spending their savings rather than contributing to their 401k plans. So these are all long-term impacts. Now, there are a lot of short-term trends as well. Just the other day, we had an earthquake in the San Francisco or Napa Valley. That's a short-term trend. You may have owned a stock or series of stocks that had a brief impact on that. It's something that could have lasted for a few minutes when the earthquake was first announced. It could have something that could have an impact that could last for 6 months or a year. You know, for example, if you own stock in a winery that was destroyed or was severely damaged. But again, that's not a long-term impact. That's not something that's going to affect an entire industry or entire series of stocks for many, many generations or many years. But we can profit from both short and long-term trends, and we should look for them. Some trends that listeners have mentioned are things like the boom in oil production, the shale oil boom, which has been brought about because of fracking and horizontal drilling. It's impacting not only the petroleum industry, but also natural gas. There's the continued technology boom. Companies that are advancing in advanced technology like Tesla or like Google, you know, self-driving cars, automation, things like supercapacitors or supercharged batteries, things like Google Fiber, where we have a lot of optical fiber being laid, and then as a corresponding result of that, a lot more high-speed internet access. Biotechnology is another good example. These are all definite long-term trends. They can have short-term implications, but they're also long-term trends. So should you go out and try and pick the best biotechnology stock to invest in, or should you go out and try and pick the best technology stock like a Google and invest in them, or a Tesla, or someone that's drilling in the Bakken region for oil or natural gas? Should you focus on that primary supplier, or do you step up or back on the supply chain and maybe look at someone that's supplying Tesla, or look at someone that's supplying Google with their optical fiber? Or rather than investing in someone that's actually drilling for energy, look at the service companies that are providing those oil field services. Do you look there? Or do you look downstream? Do you look at the companies, the specialty chemical companies, that are going to benefit from lower costs of oil, petroleum, natural gas? You know, that's going to add to their bottom line because energy costs are going to go down. Is that a good investment opportunity? Or what about the companies that are going to see major productivity gains because they're using something like Google Fiber and having access to the super high internet speed is going to make their business more productive? You know, is that a good place to invest? Or what about something like a Netflix? Well, if you can run that over Google Fiber, if it can run faster, you can have better streaming, less buffer times, people are going to be more prone to want to buy, you know, a Netflix type product or an Amazon streaming video. There's all different directions you can go with these trends. That's why I love investing in stocks. That's why I get so excited thinking about it. That's why the U.S. stock market is always my go-to place when I want to try and make money. Sure, you can make money in real estate or other things, but nothing is as exciting or as energetic as what the United States stock market offers. So as far as trying to make money in either a short-term or long-term trend and in all those areas I just mentioned, absolutely, they're all good. Do your homework. Look into the energy producers. There's some value there. You're going to find some sector leaders that make a lot of money. You're also going to find that in the people that provide services to the oil industry, and as well as the people that use it, those companies that are cracking petrochemicals and are creating other types of raw materials from them. They're all going to benefit from that. Same thing with the technology stocks, you know, the more high-speed internet. There's going to be a lot of winners. What I generally favor, because I tend to be a contrarian, is rather than investing in the primary source, I do like to either go up or down the supply chain, either one step up or one step down. Look for companies in those markets that are going to benefit. And I'll give an example. This particular one came from a listener, and it relates to high-speed internet, you know, the fact that Google Fiber is out there laying all this optical fiber. Rather than investing in Google to take advantage of that or investing in a company like Netflix that maybe would be able to run more data across those lines, what about investing in the company that makes the fiber optics? Now, a listener has suggested a company called Applied Optoelectronics. Now, I'm not going to recommend this stock one way or another. I can only give general information over this podcast. But for purposes of instruction, for educational purposes only, let's dissect this stock a little bit and look at it. Applied Optoelectronics is the name. The ticker symbol is AAOI. That's Alpha Alpha Oscar India. It's a pretty interesting little company. Let's look at the pros and cons associated with it. First of all, let's look at the company overall. Let's look at the fundamentals. They've only been public for about a year or so, maybe a year and a half, so we don't have a lot of financial data on them. That's a negative, but they do appear to be making money. They do appear to be growing. Some of the information I see here looks like in the last year they've grown, in fact, maybe 7,300% their earnings per share. It's an extraordinary amount. Now remember, they're a small company. They're starting from a very small base. They were private for a number of years, and they became an initial public offering, so some of these numbers may be a little gerrymandered. But overall, it looks like they are having a good increase in sales. Over the last 3 years, their sales rate has grown 32%. For this past quarter, their sales are up 67%. They only have 14% debt. It would be better if we had a longer history on them, but what we have looks pretty encouraging. The fact that they are an IPO, that is a good thing. You know, your growth companies aren't going to come from your old stodgy Microsofts. They're going to come from these young new companies. And with somebody like this, it's only been around, a year or two. That could be a good opportunity. Management looks like they own about 4.5% of the company. In a small company like this and an IPO like this, I'd like to see more owner management, but, 4% isn't bad. The one red flag that does go up for me, one thing I don't like about this company, is that it's a very small cap. It's a micro cap company. It only has about 14 million shares of stock available. And the stock's trading now for about $19.50. So that means that the total market capitalization for this stock is under $300 million. That's very, very insignificant in terms of the stock market. It's a micro-capitalized company. Doesn't mean you shouldn't invest in it. It just means that it could be highly volatile, and it's not as liquid as something like a Google, right? A Google is trading millions or tens of millions of shares every day. This company, its whole universe, it only has 14 million shares. So on any given day, it's only going to trade, 100 or 200,000 shares. Now, if you're only going to go out and buy 100 shares, you're going to invest $2,000, buy 100 shares. Well, then certainly a volume of 100,000 or 200,000 shares traded any given day is perfectly acceptable for you. Now, I'm just a small investment fund, but if I were to make a 10% acquisition into this stock, I would probably have to buy something in the neighborhood of 20,000 shares. Now, 20,000 shares could be a significant amount if you would consider that this company is only trading, maybe 100,000, 200,000 shares a day. If it's only trading 100,000 shares, I make a 20,000 share acquisition. That's 20% of the volume of that stock for that day. I most likely wouldn't do that. I would probably spread my trades out over multiple days. But even so, for a company this small, I don't think I'd be making that type of an acquisition with my client money. It's probably too small of a company. Now, again, there's pros and cons to that. If you're getting into that as a small individual investor, that gives you an opportunity to buy a small company, which may be growing, which may be a great opportunity, which someday a bigger company like a Google or even like a mid-sized hedge fund could come in and buy this thing 100%. They could come in and offer a 25% or a 75% premium and just take it all off the market. This could be a great opportunity for you. Could be. Again, I'm not recommending this. I'm just using this as an example. Because it's such a small cap company, it also allows you to get in on the ground floor. We've talked about all these corporate buybacks they're having. Apple recently had a 7-for-1 reverse split where they're taking shares off the market. A small company like this, if they're aggressive, if they're growing, they're not going to be taking shares off the market. They're going to be doing share splits. Maybe next year or the year after, this company, instead of having 14 million shares, maybe they'd split and create 28 million shares. Again, for you as the individual investor, that could be a great opportunity. These are the kind of stocks that it may make sense for you to have a portion of your portfolio in. I would never recommend that you put more than 10% of your portfolio in any stock. On a small, maybe aggressive company like this, possibly a high-risk company like this, maybe you only want to put 5% of your portfolio in. Those are decisions that you have to make. But as I mentioned, this is an interesting stock. It's in a growing area. They seem to be a good supplier. The fundamentals that we discussed, they're increasing sales, they're increasing profit margin. That all looks positive. If we look at an individual chart of the company, it doesn't look like it's in bad shape. As I mentioned, the stock is an initial public offering from a year and a half ago or so. That's when I would tend to buy into an IPO. I don't want to get right into a stock because you may not be aware of this, but generally insiders can't sell their shares of initial public offering for at least the first 6 months. So the first 6 months of an IPO, the price can be very volatile. As this particular one was, it looks like it came into the market with a price of around $10. As I mentioned, it's trading right now for about $19.50, so it's pretty much doubled over the last year or so. But it had gotten as high as almost $30 a share. So in its first 6 months or so, it had almost tripled in price. And that's probably when all the insiders came in and sold out. So the stock is now adjusted to this. It's calmed down a little bit. The pattern doesn't look too bad. It looks like it's had a couple double bottoms here. We're seeing increasing volume, which means more people tend to be buying it every month. Again, that's another good sign. Through several weekly periods, we have well over a million, 2 million shares being purchased. Again, that's good. We know that a huge institutional investor isn't necessarily coming in and purchasing the stock because there isn't enough volume for them to do it, but they may be taking very small pieces of it. As I look at the chart, the price is currently under the 50-day moving average. That's a very key point we talked about. If I was going to swing trade this, and by that I mean if I was going to hold it for the next couple weeks or maybe even year or so, I probably wouldn't purchase it right now because it is under that 50-day moving average. But if I think this is a great stock, if I like their technology, if I think that in 10 or 15 years this is going to be a big winner, then it really doesn't matter if I buy it for $18, $19, $20 a share, right? Because I'm looking at the extreme long term of that. Now that's not necessarily my investment style. I'm more of a trader. So now that we've determined that it looks like it has solid fundamentals, I'm going to look at the technicals of it, and I'm going to say, hey, is this something that I can buy now and hold for the next couple months or maybe half a year? Can I make a short-term profit on it? And if I did that, I most likely would not buy it while it's underneath that 50-day moving average. It looks like the 50-day moving average price is about $21 a share. This is trading right around $19.50. So I would probably wait and see if it can get closer to that $21 a share, if it can break through that 50-day moving average. And if it can also break through that in volume, I would like to see the day that it broke through its 50-day moving average, maybe the volume for that day being significantly above the 3-month moving average on volume, so maybe up 30-40%. So, for example, if the average volume is 100,000 shares traded a day, I would like to see that day that it breaks out above the 50-day moving average, when it broke out above $21 a share. I'd like to see the volume that day being 130,000 shares or maybe 150,000 shares traded that day. Certainly if it was 200,000 shares traded that day, that would be a huge increase in volume. That would show that people were serious about it, people were moving into the stock. Another entry point I might wait for, this would be to not only be above the 200-day moving average, but it seems like over the past 6 months or so, it's had some resistance right at around the $24.25 mark. So I'd like to see it go above that. That would be taking a more cautious position and waiting to get into it at that point. Again, I would wait and say, okay, let's see it get over $24.25. Let's see that happen with significant trading volume that day. That, again, might be an indication that it's a good time to get into the stock. That, incidentally, that $24.25, that would have been the 50-day moving average back in April. The stock fell through that, and that's why it came down, and then it tried to go back up to it. It went up to that level, but it didn't break through. It wasn't able to break through that $24.25 range. It wasn't able to break through that price point, and the price collapsed again. It came down to about 15 or 16, and now it's working its way back up to 20. So that's why it's very important to break through these key points of resistance and to do so in increasing volume. Let's take a look at one other thing here on that stock. One other thing I like to look at, I don't make all my choices based on this, but I do like to look at insider trading. I like to see what the officers and directors of the company are doing. And real quickly, as I scan through that, you know what that magic number is? It looks like a bunch of insiders sold back in the February-March timeframe. A lot of insiders sold, and guess what price they sold for? $24.25, right around there. And again, that would have been about probably 6 months or so into the initial public offering, so the insiders were allowed to sell. So you can see how that affects the price. These guys got in at probably virtually nothing, and when they saw the price get up to around $24, they bailed. So you want to see that stock really break through that before you get into it seriously. Remember, not only the insiders, but a lot of investors got into this stock at $10. It came onto the market at $10. There were 14 million shares sold at that time. Now, obviously, not everybody got in at that price, but there still are probably a significant amount of people that bought that stock at $10. If it gets back up at around $24 again, they may think that, hey, that's a good time for them to take a profit and leave. And that's why you want to see it break through that $24.50, $25 a share. You want to see it go beyond that. Again, I'm not making specific recommendations. I'm just pointing out things that you want to look for in an individual stock. So with this one, we determined there's a trend. There's definitely a trend in high-speed fiber optics. Big technology companies like Google are spending a lot of money to make this happen. Smaller companies like we just looked at, Applied Optoelectronics, they're taking advantage of that. They're positioned to maybe be a supplier to that industry. so the trend could favor them. We looked at their individual fundamentals. They have increasing sales. They seem to have very good profit margins. We looked at the individual technicals on the stock. We looked at the way the chart pattern looked. We looked at how far into the public offering it was. We saw that it had about 4-4.5% of management ownership. We also saw that a lot of them like to sell the stock for around $24. So these simple steps that we just took looking at this stock would be the same things that you'd apply to other stocks. It's not rocket science. It does take a lot of time and effort, and we've only looked at the surface. We've only looked at the very, very minimum on this stock. If I were to invest a significant amount in this stock, I would probably spend 10 to 30 hours studying it to make sure that it was the right move for me and my clients, not the few minutes we just spent here. But that's the work that it takes to be an investor. That's why I say you have to be patient. You have to be diligent. You first want to save. You want to build up that nest egg. You want to educate yourself, and then you want to move into the investor class. And although it takes work, it is simple. It isn't complicated. Most of it's common sense. Well, there you go. There you have it. You just experienced the inside baseball plays that a money manager considers when he's buying a stock. Now, I know some of you ate that up. You loved it. And others of you, you probably hated it. So I'd like to know. I have a general feel for what the audience likes by emails I've received so far. But if you want to hear more of this in detailed, down-in-the-weeds type stock analysis, go to the website. Let me know. On the other hand, if you'd like to hear more of a softer approach to wealth building, if you like it when we focus more on the behavioral type aspects of wealth building, if you'd like to hear me talk more about that, go to the website and let me know about that as well. The podcast website is wealthsteading.com. I always like to get your feedback, your questions, your concerns. We haven't had a market update, so on the next episode, we'll do a brief market update. And then since we crunched so many numbers today, on the next episode, after we do the market update, we'll get into one of the wealth building principles, something that doesn't involve so much in the weeds type analysis. As always, I appreciate your listening. This is John Pugliano, and I'm wishing you the best of returns.